get 0.001 on a blow test of any drug, it's automatically driving under the influence. But let's say I smoked weed 3 weeks ago, it wouldn't have the same effect as if I was driving straight after.
So much more dangerous, you'd say?
Yeah, much more dangerous with, you know, you kind of get a scale of how much is in your system from that blow test. I think maybe if we have one for alcohol, say you can have a drink or two or be under a certain level. I mean, if you're going to introduce this new weed policy saying people can legally carry it, I think that the numbers of drivers are going to go up. So maybe in the future, you'd have to put in a 0.05 of cannabis, which means what, maybe they smoked a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's the time, it's the difference in the time scale, isn't it? The retention of the effects. Thank you very much, James, for your call. James in Woking. That is it from me for today. Thank you very much for your company. You can download the all new official LBC app, remember, for free from your app store right now. Coming up at 7 on LBC, it's Ian Dale, but now it's time for Ben Kentish.
Sheila, thank you very much indeed. Hello, afternoon at 4 o'clock.
It's like 25 different thoughts of what to do in that exact moment all happening at once.
A quite incredible increase in the number of school children being diagnosed with special needs. It's up 140% in the last 10 years alone, and it's creating chaos for local councils. They simply don't have enough cash to support the number of special needs children who now need help. Today, experts claim that what's going on is an over-reliance of diagnoses of conditions like ADHD. In other words, the problem isn't so much the children, but the way that we are bringing them up, and crucially, the way that we are educating and schooling them. Is that right? And if it's not, what is driving that quite staggering increase in children with special needs, and what do we do about it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 4 o'clock, Merseyside police have been given more time to question a man after a car was driven into crowds in Liverpool on Monday. A 53-year-old has been questioned on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after it happened at the Premier League title parade. LBC's reporter Liam Gotting has more.
We were expecting some sort of update this afternoon. Merseyside police told us yesterday they had till lunchtime today to question that 53-year-old man they arrested. We know he's currently being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving, and driving while unfit through drugs.
79 people were hurt and 7 are still in hospital. Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar. The Israeli Prime Minister included him on a list of the group's leaders killed in recent airstrikes on Gaza. It's believed he was killed when a hospital in southern Gaza was targeted earlier this month, killing 28 people. The UN's special coordinator for the Middle East peace process, Sigrid Karg, has been addressing the UN Security Council this afternoon.
Civilians in Gaza have lost hope, Mr. President. Instead of saying goodbye, see you tomorrow, Palestinians now say, see you in heaven. Death is their companion. It's not life. It is not hope. Palestinians in Gaza deserve more than survival. They deserve a viable and vibrant future.
Two police officers who used a taser and synthetic pepper spray on an elderly man who used a wheelchair have been cleared of assault. PC Stephen Smith and PC Rachel Komoto were accused of using excessive force on Donald Burgess in East Sussex in 2022. The care home he was staying in had called 999 when he reportedly grabbed a table knife and threatened to stab staff. A senior minister has told LBC that the Chancellor has a tough set of decisions to make ahead of June's spending review. It follows warnings from the head of the Met Police over plans to release some criminals early as part of prison reforms. And Princess Diana's brother says a farmhouse on the estate of her former family home has been burnt by vandals. Earl Spencer says no one was inside the property on the Althorp estate overnight. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 41 points at 87.36. The dollar buys the pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6. Rain clearing for most tomorrow to leave a windy day with a mixture of sunny spells and showers in the west. Warm in the south with some rain lingering in northern Scotland, highs of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Just gone four. Hello, a very, very good afternoon. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC this afternoon. Great to have you with us on the show.
Some of those offenders are going to commit more crime and more trouble locally.
The government's plan to release thousands more prisoners early could spark a new crime wave in Britain. That, at least, a pretty dire warning from senior police chief today. But with prisons packed to the rafters and no new ones set to be built anytime soon, is there any other option? And if so, what is it? We'll discuss. And
when I had them much too old in life, you know, I started when I was 52. And now, now I'm 64, you know, and the youngest is 6.
A couple win the legal right to parent a surrogate baby. Lovely news, you might think, but not everybody seems to agree. Why? Because the couple in question are both aged 72, meaning they will be well into their 80s, even by the time that child starts secondary school. Is that acceptable? Is it selfish? Is it even cruel? Your thoughts on that later in the show.
Call and WhatsApp message now. 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Ben Kentish on LBC.
But first this afternoon, a problem that is crippling local councils, costing the taxpayer an eye-watering sum of money, making life impossible for many teachers, and perhaps most worryingly of all, leading to thousands upon thousands of children being denied the education and the support they deserve at school. I'm talking, you might have guessed, about the quite baffling increase in the number of school children being helped with special needs. Because in the last decade alone, the number of children who are subject to special needs support plans, EHCPs as they're technically known, has shot up. It's gone through the roof. It's up specifically 140% since 2015 alone. And quite frankly, nobody seems entirely sure why. Today, though, one group of experts offers a possible explanation. What they say is going on is that we are experiencing an over-reliance, their word, on diagnoses of conditions like ADHD, when actually the problem that we've got is less in the minds of the children and more in the system that we are bringing those children up in. According to these experts, and they include groups like the Council for Disabled Children, the problem is that schools just cannot cope with children who might simply need a bit of extra help. Teachers aren't being trained to do that enough, so they are demanding that parents go through the long and laborious process of getting a diagnosis, meanwhile saying there's nothing that they can do for those children until then. Schools don't have the resources they need, so that approach works for them too. At the same time, we've cut the amount of time that those children have to run around outside, to do sports, to burn off the energy that we all know most children need to burn off. We've got a health system that denies them the help they need until it reaches crisis point. And all this, of course, only after we've destroyed their attention spans by thrusting smartphones and tablets at them almost as soon as they can walk. And then we wonder why so many children are struggling at school. One explanation there from one group of experts. We are pretending the children are the problem when really the issue is us. The way we are raising them, the way we are parenting them, the way that we are schooling them. I think that's quite a convincing explanation, but it's not the only one. Another says that actually we're just telling people they've got conditions or disabilities when actually there's nothing really wrong with them. Or that these conditions have always been there in the numbers we're seeing now. The only change is we understand them better and so we're diagnosing them properly in the way that we should have done a long time ago. What do you think is going on here? How do we explain a 140% increase in the number of pupils in school needing support with special needs or disabilities in 10 years alone? What is driving that increase? And what needs to change? What do we do about that? Because this is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for those children who are missing out on the help, the support they need, sometimes with lifelong consequences. Not sustainable for the parents, tearing their hair out, sitting up wide awake at night, in despair, watching their kids fall further and further behind. Massive personal cost to all this, and a massive economic one too, by the way. Currently spend £12 billion a year in England alone on special needs. That's a full £4 billion more than it was 10 years ago. What is going on here? What is driving this quite incredible increase? And what needs to change? Call me this afternoon, 0345 6060 973. If you've got any experience of this, whether it's your child, perhaps it's you that had special needs, if you work in a school, if you work in a local council in this area, what do you think explains what we are witnessing? And what do you think we could be doing differently to stop it or to help those kids more? That number once more, 0345 6060 973. Call or WhatsApp me on that main number. Text me if you like this afternoon on 84850, or say Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Rachel Filmer joins us, a special education needs and disabilities campaigner from the group Special Needs Jungle. Rachel, great to have you with us here on LBC. What's your sense of what explains that quite staggering 140% increase in just 10 years? Afternoon.
Afternoon, Ben. I definitely don't think it's an over-reliance on diagnosis. I think there's quite a clear reason why the number of EHCPs has risen so much, and it's one that most people don't want to discuss. Essentially, only a very small proportion of children with SEND have an EHCP. Mm. Most are supported without a plan. But that support that's available to children has been gradually chipped away. Funding hasn't kept pace with the support that's needed. So schools are under massive financial pressure. They can't afford to, you know, get some advice from an educational psychologist or get some help from a speech and language therapist without a plan being in place. So we have all of these children who whose needs could be met with a bit of support early, but that support doesn't exist. So the only way for those parents really to get the help that their child needs is to request an assessment for an EHCP. And if their needs meet the right threshold, they will get a plan. But nobody gets a plan just because they have a diagnosis. Mm. It's based on your needs, not a diagnosis. So actually, the number of children diagnosed doesn't actually impact whether they have the needs or not.
Do you have to have a diagnosis to get the EHCP plan?
No, you don't.
Okay.
And any school that says that you do is behaving unlawfully. It's essentially around whether you may have special educational needs and whether you might need a plan in order to meet those needs. Those are the only criteria for assessment.
Rachel, just to be clear in what you say, I just want to be really, really specific on this. You're suggesting that because schools are so under-resourced, they are forcing parents to go down this sort of very arduous path in order to basically force the school to give the child the support that they really should have got a lot earlier.
That's exactly
That's right. So this
and
comes.
The government, yeah, they've been talking a lot about improving early intervention, improving the support that's given without a plan, and that would be fantastic if they can do that. We would welcome that massively.
But we have also seen an increase in diagnosis of certain conditions as well. Is it your view that more children have special needs than did 10 years ago, or that we are just detecting them and diagnosing them more? What explains that?
It's very difficult to say, and I'm not an expert, but I think we do need to acknowledge that these conditions are being diagnosed by trained medical professionals. You know, they're not being handed out by someone with limited qualifications. They're being assessed by psychiatrists who are diagnosing them. So I am more tempted to believe that they know what they're talking about than a school or a politician or anybody
else. So the idea that these conditions are being overdiagnosed by sort of, diagnosis happy doctors who are willing to take a few hundred quid if it's done privately, and it often is, in order to give the diagnosis that the parent thinks their child has, you would push back on that. That's not what's happening.
I absolutely would push back on that. And I think what would be the purpose? Because despite some of these comments, it doesn't actually entitle you to anything that you can't have without that diagnosis. It doesn't achieve anything.
Parents say, well, it's important that they get extra time, they get extra allowances in school, it opens up certain financial benefits that you can get if you have a diagnosis and so on. There are things that you might need a diagnosis to get. I'll take your point completely, though, that psychiatrists are not going to do that sort of willy-nilly.
Yeah, I mean, disability benefits, support in school, they're all based on the needs you have and not the diagnosis that you have. So the diagnosis itself is much less important. And actually, in some areas, the NHS is creating delays in the referral process now. So they're saying you can't refer a child for an assessment for a diagnosis until you've proven you've given them 6 months of help in school, which means if you have ADHD and you would benefit from medication, we're just wasting time with these children, wasting time that they could be more engaged in school. And actually, if you're diagnosed and you, you know, medication would help you, that would mean you need less support in school, not more. So I think conflating diagnosis and the number of plans is a really oversimplified kind of way of looking at it.
Understood. Really interesting. Rachel, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Rachel Filmer, SEND campaigner from the group Special Needs Jungle. If you've got any insight into what is going on here, if you've got any experience or expertise that can help shed some light on how the number of children with special needs plan in schools is up 140% in 10 years alone. Pick up the phone, call me this afternoon. 0345 60 60 973 is the number. You can text me if you like on 84850. Your calls coming in on that. Those to come in just a moment. Ben Kentish here on LBC. It's 4:15.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, moving anti-clockwise, there are delays of 45 minutes heading into the Dartford Tunnel. Also on the anti-clockwise stretch of the M25, queues just before Junction 12, which is the turn-off for the M3. Looking elsewhere, in Camden, the Chalk Farm Road is partially blocked on the southbound side from Hartland Road to Camden Lock Place. That's all because of a lorry that's broken down. While in Wanstead, it's slow on the A12 eastbound before the Redbridge roundabout, before the North Circular Road. In East London, there are queues on the A13 eastbound between Prince Regent Lane and the Lodge Avenue flyover. And finally, looking on the tubes, on the Bakerloo line, Regent's Park station is closed because the lifts aren't working.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, for this week's fresh weekly specials, save a third with our British Meat Pack for £15. That's 22 pieces, including 6 burgers, 8 sausages, 4 pork loin steaks and 4 salmon cut sizzle steaks. So fire up the barbecue, whatever the weather. Invite your mates, all of the neighbours and your cousins, because that really is great value for a proper feast. Fresh from Market Street. Majority of stores subject to availability. Excludes online and Morrison's Daily. Ends 29th of May.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
You could be a lotto millionaire like Terry. Get your ticket for tonight's draw. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shotterly Fabulous. So don't diver, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off 6 or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores and lines, subject to availability. Excludes Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
4:18, let me come straight to your calls on what is driving this massive increase, unprecedented increase in the number of pupils, school children in school needing help with special needs. Gabby's calling this afternoon from Bushy. Hello, Gabby.
Hi, Ben. I can't really give an exact answer to what's driving an increase, but I agree with your previous caller that you can't conflate a diagnosis with the need for more support, because when you apply for an EHCP, I think a common misconception is that you need a diagnosis to unlock specific care, and you don't. When you apply for an EHCP or when your child's needs are flagged to you, whether that's from a Senko, from whatever setting they're in, you then go through the most arduous, lengthy anxiety-inducing, stressful situation. And I can speak from experience as I'm going through it myself. My husband and I are going through it. And it is, as soon as you start that process, people you connect with who have gone through it with their own children, the first thing they say to you is, get ready for a battle, get ready to fight. Mm-hmm. Almost like prepping you to go to war. And I can't emphasize enough how true that is, which is, to be honest with you, a national shame for this country. Absolutely. That parents have to prove to the local authority, strangers, people who sit behind a screen, and the evidence that you have to build, it's like a dissertation times three. It is stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of paperwork. That it's a very upsetting and traumatizing process as parents you have to go through. And to display the need that your child needs access to support, you're not painting them in the best light, if you know what I mean. You have to emphasize why it is that they need help. Mm. And it's very, very traumatizing and stressful. And after all of that process, you know, people sort of think, oh, well, you know, it's easy to get a diagnosis, then you unlock help. I wouldn't wish my worst enemy going through the process of what we've gone through. And I think it sounds a bit dramatic, but it's your child at the end of the day, and you just want them to start school and have the same opportunities as any other child.
And that's why it's so stressful for parents that are expect the state to be there and support in a way that it should, and are finding actually that Gabby, rather than working with you, it's working against you, really.
It's totally working against you. And I just have to flag that what is so hard for parents is there are legal obligations that a local authority has to abide by. Yes. In terms of time frames, in terms of when they have to let you know, updates on the next process of the HCP, whatever that might be, whatever the needs of the child are, whether it's, you know, the child is dyspraxic or they are vision impaired and hard of hearing. Like, it's obviously a whole host of issues. It's very rare that a local authority, and I'm not going to name any names, but it is very rare that a local authority will meet that deadline. Mm. And what that does is that pushes the child to basically become educationally homeless. Yeah. If they are not then able to get into the setting that they need to by a certain time. And I've spoken, you know, I'm an aspiring SENT advocate myself, because I'm so passionate about this. And I've spoken to people where their child has basically got PTSD because they're either in a setting where they're sitting in the corner with no help, no support, nobody there to you know, allow them to thrive in a way that works for them.
It's heartbreaking. I mean, it's disgraceful.
It's
absolute and I have sympathy with the councils, Gabby, because the same governments that have told them they need to sort out this problem are the same ones that cut their budgets by up to 50% and now saying, well, you're breaking your legal obligations. And the councils say, we cannot cope. Half of councils in this country are on the verge of bankruptcy.
The problem is it's awful. I mean, I know that the local authority and the councils have it hard. And I know a lot of that is because there is a postcode lottery and the pot of money that the council has, you know, it's not regulated. There is no legal obligation for X amount of money to go on SEND support, and it is not like for like with every council. And again, unfortunately, it is a postcode lottery. And I know for a fact that if children were given the ability to get into the right setting from the get-go and you intervened early enough, that actually puts less pressure on the public purse, because that child is led in a direction that works for them. They're not seeking help from mental health services. They're not seeking help from other public funded services. And I am so sick and tired of the narrative always being placed on the onus of the parents
not have to fight in the way that you and so many other parents have just to get basic support in school, in this case for your daughter. What sort of support is it that you're looking for with your daughter? What does she need?
So my daughter was diagnosed with a genetic syndrome called Turner syndrome. Mm. And she has a significant social and a learning difficulty. Now, we are privileged enough to have access to certain private support, speech and language therapy and the like. But at the end of the day, what we've seen with her is that when we interviewed hard and early enough, and we do the work at home with her as well, on our own accord, we see the improvement and the ability that she has to thrive.
She just needs that support in school as well. And it's heartbreaking. I find it really, really upsetting, to be honest. And I know you don't need me to tell you, Gabby, but the idea of your daughter and so many others having to sit there in school, not getting the support and the attention and the extra focus that she and so many others need. It is. You said it's a national disgrace. It's absolutely what it is. Thank you for the call, Gabby. I hope you get there. But you shouldn't have to fight this hard to get there in the first place. That's the point, isn't it? Thanks, Gabby. Maggie's a new caller this afternoon in Margate. Welcome, Maggie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My heart goes out to the previous caller. I've worked in a mainstream setting, but exclusively with children with SEN for the last 15 years. And to say that there's overdiagnosis is not helpful. It's always existed. It's just that the knowledge in the 15 years I've been in SEN and what we know now and the research has changed dramatically. So there's much more knowledge. Personally, myself, I was diagnosed with ADHD only 2 years ago.
Were you?
Despite working in a setting, I didn't recognise that in myself. So I have a personal experience of going through the education system not knowing that I had this difficulty and experiencing big challenges in school myself.
Because when you were at school, Maggie, much like when I was at school, there wasn't the understanding of some of the conditions that there now is. So it's not.
And I'm the wrong gender as well in that generation.
Because it's often particularly underdiagnosed in women, ADHD and autism, actually, yeah.
Yes. And the other thing I think it's really important to consider as well is, you know, all children. School through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, the classroom looks the same. But what we do with our children hasn't changed at all. And we still continue to expect all our children and increasingly more our SEN children to fit into a system that is quite frankly Victorian.
What's Victorian about it?
Well, if you look at a Victorian classroom, if you Googled an image of a Victorian classroom, it looks exactly the same as a classroom of today.
So what would you like to see change about that?
It's about if we reach our SEN children in school, we reach all our children in school.
Right.
And we treat our SEN children differently, and some do, and there are not enough specialist provisions for those that need that specialist support. But for children like myself and my daughter, who was diagnosed at 19... a mainstream setting for a lot of our ADHD and autistic children is not fit for purpose, and we continue to expect them to be in that mould. And in fact, all our children need exercise, need nature, need music, need the opportunity to learn in a way that suits them.
And they're getting a lot less of all the things you just mentioned than they were in 10 or 15 years ago. And then we wonder why they can't sit still, and they can't sit still because they're kids and they've got a lot of energy, and we say, oh, they must have ADHD or they must have this, that and the other, as if they are the problem.
Well, exactly that. Yeah. But also in addition to that, as parents, you know, we're expected, you know, to continue down the same sort of route in terms of sort of, you know, aligning with what the school thinks is best for the child rather than what we know.
Gotcha.
As parents. I think it's really important to consider those factors as well.
What damage does it do, Maggie, from your experience with SEND pupils, if they don't get the support that they should, if those plans aren't in place, the extra time, the extra focus and attention isn't there? What happens to those kids?
So those children grow up thinking that they're not good enough. Those children grow up thinking that they haven't tried enough, that they could, for example, in my case, I was always told I could do better.
Right.
And that I was lazy and all those sort of negative connotations. So all children have the potential to be able to achieve something that is relevant to their level of development and social engagement.
Understood. Maggie, it's not just about lost education, it's about that lifelong loss of confidence that comes from being forced to sit in a setting without the support you need, where you are basically led to believe that there is something wrong with you or you are a failure. It's crushing. Maggie, thank you. What a fascinating first call. Let's talk to Alex more about this. Alex is in Bournemouth this afternoon. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Ben. So I'm going to echo, similar to the first and second caller, that parents do have it hard. The system is very much up against them. In fact, even in my own situation, it became so toxic for the fighting for support that I've become estranged from my family because the tension was too much.
Wow.
The true element that I think has constantly been under this issue is austerity cuts. It's been ever since George Osborne was in, he has cut everything for disability and the Tories have continued to carry on. I think there is an unfortunate ableist rhetoric that is affecting the way we think about people with special needs in our country. And it hits us when we're youngest, it hits us in education, when we're older. Like every rung of the ladder that we try and climb up, we are pushed down because we can't perform at 100% like everybody else can.
And you were diagnosed what age, Alex?
I was diagnosed at 10. I dropped out of school in year 5. I've got like a cocktail of mental health, like ADHD, autism, developed clinical depression, which then developed into anxiety because I didn't get the support I needed because the NHS kept pushing and like kicking our symptoms into the long grass.
So school and, for you sounds like hell, frankly.
Yeah, I went to special needs school in secondary. Right. I went to two different ones and they're not really more beneficial. It might be now, but when I was there, I was only allowed to do one GCSE, like, because my school didn't do GCSEs for people because normally the level of intelligence you would have there was not always there. I can't remember what it is below that, but GCSEs weren't even a thing.
So you weren't given the opportunity that every young person should be given, which is to fulfill their potential and do as much as they can or as little as they can. And you weren't. And so many aren't. It's an absolute sort. It's just shameful. It's completely and utterly shameful how badly we are failing special needs pupils right now. Alex, thank you very much indeed for highlighting that so starkly, as so many others have, and lots more calls coming in just a moment. Thank you, Alex. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Still to come.
Netanyahu said 2 weeks ago, we think we've got it. We are working to destroy Hamas completely.
Benjamin Netanyahu announces that Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar. Get the details on that and what it might mean for the war. Straight after news headlines, 4:31, Amelia Cox.
Detectives investigating Monday's crash in Liverpool have been given more time to question a 53-year-old man. He's being held on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after a car was driven into crowds during the Premier League title parade. Benjamin Netanyahu says Israeli forces have eliminated the senior Hamas leader, Mohammed Sinwar. It's believed he was killed during a strike on a hospital in southern Gaza earlier this month, in which 28 people were killed. And two police officers who used a taser and pepper spray on a 92-year-old man who used a wheelchair have been cleared of assault. Care home staff had called 999 after Donald Burgess grabbed a table knife and threatened to stab staff. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, turning windy in the southwest, a low of 6.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got...
Well, how will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street or Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. The current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Download the app to redeem all week. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
The Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Hillary's mid-season sale just got even better.
get up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's 10% off all blinds, curtains and shutters. And an extra 10% off our new range of awnings and pergolas, with measuring and fitting always included. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit Hillarys.co.uk. Hurry, Hillarys extra 10% off everything must end 2nd of June. Conditions apply.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training. Like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973.
4:34 the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. More on the reported killing of Hamas leader Mohamed Sinwar in just a moment, and why there's a bit of confusion in Israel about whether he is or isn't dead. Bring the details of that in a couple of minutes' time. First, though, Jay's a new caller in Harrow, Jay, ringing to carry on our conversation about special needs in schools, why the number of pupils with it has gone up so much, and what we need to do about it. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Yeah, I'm just calling to follow on from what, you know, the other callers have said. I've got a little boy who's been diagnosed with autism, and he's at an age where he's going to be starting school this September. So my wife and I, we've kind of been around the local borough. I think we've visited no less than kind of a dozen schools, and we've kind of ultimately been told in no uncertain terms that, you know, he's, even though he's got these special needs, unless he's kind of officially diagnosed and has an educational healthcare plan, there's only so much that we're going to do.
Yes.
Now, you know, they've told us, you know, we get told the same thing. Each school gets something, what's called a notional budget. They get a certain amount. And you know, a couple of schools have basically told us, look, that budget is for us to budget however we see fit. It's not specifically for your child. So you're left with no choice. I mean, as a parent, if you're told, listen, if you don't get that diagnosis, if you don't get that healthcare in place, we're going to do the best we can, but we can't guarantee anything. Now, would you be comfortable sending a 4 or 5-year-old into this massive environment? You know, I mean, my little boy goes to nursery at the moment. It's a smaller setting. You know, there's a ratio of kind of, you know, one adult to about eight or nine children. He's going to get thrust into this environment where there's 30 to 1, you know, much older children, bigger children, new world, and so we'll send him in and we'll do the best we can. I mean, it's scary for him,
Jerry. I mean, and it's frightening for you as a parent that he might have to be thrown into that world where, let's be honest, you're worried he will really struggle.
Yep, absolutely. So we had to go down the route of getting a diagnosis privately. It wasn't cheap. You know, it was a 15-minute consultation. They said, yes, we definitely think he is on the spectrum.
But was that all it was, Jay? Just 15
yeah,
minutes?
Yeah, it was. I was shocked. I was shocked. So I said to my wife when I walked out, I said, how? We had an inkling.
Yes.
That there's something that we said, look, I'm not saying something's right. We just said, look, he's got additional needs. The nursery didn't pick up on it because they said, look, as far as we can see, he turns up, he's well-behaved, he's well-mannered. And they give this analogy, which I don't know if you've heard of, but it's ultimately like a can of Coke, which is what they do. They mask. They go in. They kind of do what they need to fit in.
Yes.
And they've been shook all day. And then they come home to their safe place and they just explode. And it's not as a parent that I can't handle it. He's my child. I'll do whatever it takes to make him comfortable. But that angst and all of that anxiety built up throughout the whole day, it's only going to lead to kind of mental health issues.
Of course.
Now, but this is the issue.
Do you have confidence in that diagnosis, Jay? Because I'm generally quite sceptical of this sort of narrative that certain parts of the media have been promoting. Oh, everyone's getting diagnosed with these things these days. They're massively overdiagnosed. I am sceptical of that because these diagnoses are being made by highly trained expert clinicians. And yet, when I hear stories about people being given these labels off the basis of nothing more than a 15-minute diagnosis, it does beg the question. I mean, do you have confidence in your son's diagnosis?
I was a little confused because, you know, we did it when he was relatively young, when he was, you know, 2.5, 3 years old. And we understand, you know, that children develop at different stages and, you know, it's hard. But we have gone down the NHS route and we've been told, listen, he's had an initial consultation on the NHS. They said, yes, he's definitely on the spectrum, but this is not an official diagnosis. For that, you're going to have to wait another 2.5 years. Now, if you can imagine waiting 2.5 years, so wait till he's in year 1, 2 at school just to get a diagnosis.
You can't. You can't. This is because of the delays. These children, so many children are going to school day after day, week after week, year after year, literally. Parents thinking they've got a condition, waiting for a diagnosis. And unless you've got the means to go private, there's no way of getting it. They might be halfway through their education by the time someone actually says, yes, here's what they're struggling with. Jay, thank you very much indeed for calling in for the first time. Jay and Harrow. It's just every single element, every single stage of the process that should be helping parents, should be helping special needs children, and yes, schools and teachers too, is broken. Is failing the health part, the school part, the local council part, all of it. And it all comes back, as our previous caller was saying, to underfunding and cuts. Talk more about that in just a moment. If you've got any insight or experience into what's going on, why the number of children in school with special needs plans in place is up 140% in a decade, pick up the phone this afternoon, 0345 6060 973. Just before we talk more about that, though, 20 to 5 is the time. Let's just touch on the announcement from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in the last hour or so that, as he put it, Israel has eliminated Hamas chief Mohammed Sinwar in Gaza. Mohammed Sinwar, the younger brother of Yahya Sinwar, who you might remember was killed by Israeli troops last year. Yotam Confino joins us, Middle East correspondent and author. Yotam, a bit of confusion here, because Netanyahu stood up and said, we've got Mohammed Sinwar, he's been eliminated, only for the Israeli military to say it can't confirm that that's the case. What's going on? An afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Yeah, it's a good point. You would think that Prime Minister Netanyahu is the leading authority when it comes to confirming such assassinations. So it doesn't look good when the IDF goes out and contradicts him. It just goes to show that sometimes Netanyahu maybe is getting a bit ahead of himself. We also don't have any confirmation from Hamas, which usually takes quite a while. If you go back just a few months, Israel assassinated Mohammed Deif, the commander-in-chief of Hamas's military. And it took a long, long time for Hamas to actually confirm that he was even killed. So when you have Netanyahu saying that Sinwar has been killed, but you don't have a confirmation from the IDF or from Hamas, I would take it with a grain of salt. I would also say at the same time, it does look like he was at least targeted. Mm. And perhaps also killed.
I mean, it's going to look like a spectacular failure of Netanyahu if he stands up and says, we've eliminated this guy, and then it turns out that they haven't. How big, if it is true, and you have to assume that the Israeli Prime Minister is not going to put himself in a situation where he has to frantically backtrack, but if it is true, Yotam, how big a blow would that be for Hamas and how big a boost for Israel?
First of all, it's a big scalp for Israel. Every senior Hamas official for Israel is a big scalp. It's something that they can go to the Israeli public to show that they are going after Hamas leadership. They're killing them one by one. Mohammed Sinwar was the leader of Hamas in Gaza. He was also the one who had the final say on any ceasefire. So he was obviously what you would call a hardliner in Hamas's leadership. He was one that didn't want the war to end. And he was also seen as an obstacle to reaching at least a temporary ceasefire. So if he was indeed killed, it's a huge boost for Israel. It's a huge loss for Hamas because he was by far the most senior leader of Hamas inside Gaza. He was also one of the architects of the October 7th massacre. And he was also, as I said, one of the main obstacles for Hamas to reach a ceasefire with Israel now.
And just lastly, I mean, it's a sort of double boost in his way, Yotam, isn't it? Because if it is confirmed that he was killed and he was killed in an airstrike on a hospital, that Israel turns around and says to those, why are you bombing hospitals? It says, well, as we've been saying repeatedly, because that's where Hamas leaders are hiding. And if Hamas leaders choose to hide in hospitals, that is where we have to target them.
Exactly. I don't think at this point, at least when you're talking about the most serious experts and scholars and journalists who cover this war, there's no doubt that Hamas is using hospitals for military purposes. But of course, having the leader of Hamas quite literally hiding underneath a hospital along perhaps with 10 other Hamas members, according to Saudi media. That is a significant boost for Israel's argument that, of course, they have to go into all of these hospitals. And I would also say for those media that did some of their own research after Mohammed Sinwar was targeted and they said that he was not there, that would be quite embarrassing for them if it turns out that he was indeed killed underneath the hospital.
It certainly would. Yotam, thank you very much indeed for that comprehensive update. Yotam Confina, Middle East correspondent and author. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Coming up after five.
Some of those offenders are going to commit more crime and more trouble locally. That work's going to wash back onto policing and we need the resources to deal with that.
Met Police Chief Sir Mark Rowley tells LBC that proposed changes to criminal sentencing guidelines will cost hundreds of millions in extra policing costs. Talk lots more about that after five. In a moment, more of your calls on special education needs and what is going so wrong for so many pupils in so many schools. Ben Kentish here. The time now, 4:44.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, going anti-clockwise, there are delays of roughly 35 minutes, the Dartford Tunnel. And staying with the M25, going anti-clockwise, there are queues just before Junction 12, which is the turn-off of the M3. Looking elsewhere, in Camden, the Chalk Farm Road is partially blocked on the southbound side from Hartland Road to Camden Lock Place. That's because of a lorry that has broken down. While in Wanstead, it's slow on the A12, heading eastbound just before the Redbridge roundabout. That's before the North Circular Road. And in East London, queues on the A13 eastbound between Prince Regent Lane and the Lodge Avenue flyover. Finally, on the Bakerloo line, Regent's Park Station is closed, and that's because the lifts are out of order.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Call Ben Kentish 0345 6060973 LBC.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off six or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores and lines, subject to availability. Exclude Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Got any tips? Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the BetVictor Predictor. And in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shottily Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets from only £7 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
4:40 at the time, just before I talk to Nicola and Mark about special needs, a little tease to what's coming up ahead tomorrow on LBC. An LBC exclusive, our crime correspondent Andy Hughes, has been looking at the scale of knife crime in our schools and our playgrounds.
More and more children are choosing to carry knives, and they're not afraid to use them. Make no mistake about it, this is the biggest threat to young lives we've ever faced in this country.
Do you know anyone who's been stabbed?
Yeah, I know, like, quite a few people.
Our investigation can reveal that thousands of children are now taking deadly weapons into their own schools.
You'd bring the knife into school?
Yeah.
And what's worse, they're getting younger.
The youngest one for me was 9.
So what is happening to the younger generation? What's changed?
We're living in a digital world now where violent behaviour is almost normalised in the minds of some young people.
And you can hear that exclusive report from crime correspondent Andy Hughes here on LBC all the through the day tomorrow. 4:49 this time. For now, back to your calls on special education needs. Why has the number of pupils with them gone through the roof in the last 10 years? And what are we going to do about it? Nicola's calling on that from Bury St Edmunds this afternoon. Afternoon to you, Nicola. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
So I guess the reason I phoned in today is because one of the things I've been hearing is that parents feel that they have to spend a huge amount of money securing private diagnoses for things, and that's actually not the case at all. So I just wanted to offer a little bit of clarity around the diagnoses issue.
Please, Nicola, fire away.
All right. So when schools together with parents feel that a child has a special educational need, the child's name is usually placed on something called the SEND Register. And that's not a national database or anything like that, but it often unlocks a second wave of funding that allows schools to put in place additional support for that child. And when it is no longer reasonable, if you like, for schools to meet the child's needs using that money and those resources, that's when schools together with parents tend to think about something called an education healthcare plan.
Yes.
So the issue is really with the explosion in the number of education healthcare plans that have been issued over the last decade. So just to put into context what an education healthcare plan is, it's really a statement that secures provision that can no longer reasonably be expected to be provided by schools using the resources and the funds that are available to them. And that's where this diagnosis issue comes in. Because the law says in order to trigger a statutory assessment for that plan, the child either has or may have a special educational need. And that's defined in law as either an intellectual learning disability or a significantly greater difficulty in learning than their peers. And then the second part of that is whether or not the child requires provision that may be in accordance with an education healthcare plan. Now, special educational provision is defined as educational training that goes above and beyond that which is generally made available to the same peer group.
Right.
So, to demystify what all of that means, there are only three waves of educational provision in this country. The first one is called Quality First Teaching, often referred to as QFT. So every child in the country is entitled to a place in an established education environment where they're taught by qualified teachers who deliver that nationally recognised curriculum. And the school receives a certain amount of funding for each child on roll. And that's roughly around £5,000. Okay? So when parents and schools recognise that a child may have a special educational need and that child's name is placed onto the SEND Register, schools get up to an extra £6,000 per head. Now, it goes through a very complex funding formula, and that's affected by where they are within the country and whether they're right in a deprived area and how many children they have with SEND.
Nicola, sorry, help me out here slightly. Where do you think the problem lies? What is it about the current system that needs to change? Is it the bureaucracy you're talking about here?
No, I don't think it's that. I think there are several things that have changed since COVID, and we can see that within the data, because prior to COVID, there were around about 4,000 appeals that went through the statutory appeal mechanism for EHCPs. And this year, we're looking at in excess of 25,000.
And do you think that's linked to the pandemic? Because in a way, it would be surprising if it wasn't, would it? I mean, these children we're talking about now have grown up in circumstances that no one in living memory has grown up in. They grew up at a time when they weren't allowed to hug their grandparents or see their friends.
I think there's a couple of things there. So the fastest growing primary area of need is social, emotional, mental health, which is quite telling. So that means that children are suffering in that social, emotional, mental health area. And that's clearly emerged since the pandemic. So that ties into some of the things that you're saying there. But I think it's also worth noting that in the entire pupil population across the country, 21% of the pupil population have special educational needs.
Right.
But only 4% have an education healthcare plan. So the lion's share of children within the country have their needs met using quality first teaching and Wave 2 Send support. So we're talking about a very small proportion of children cannot have their needs met using the resources available.
But that says to me that if the number that do have those plans is up 140%, and that's only a fraction of the total, then the true sort of scale of, well, you said it yourself, one in five children now has special educational needs. And that is going up and up and up. Nicola, interesting perspective. Thank you for your expertise and insight on that. Mark's a new caller in Welwyn Garden City this afternoon. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ben. Lovely to speak to you.
And you, so you're a teacher.
Yes, I'm a trainee teacher in an SEN school. And I just wanted to share my perspective on this. Personally, I think it's down to a lack of funding. I think that's partly the reason that we're seeing the rise go up, because having worked in an SEN school, and I currently still work there, we've had children that have come from mainstream settings, and to get into the school you need an EHCP. However, you don't potentially need a diagnosis of anything. So you don't need to be diagnosed with ADHD, you do not need to be diagnosed with autism. However, it can help. Now, I've had children that have come from a mainstream background, and they've been there for 2-3 years. And because they haven't had the access to get an AHCP, and as some of your previous callers have mentioned, it's a very stressful thing for the parents to go through, because it is a complete, almost background, history check on this child.
Well, our caller earlier described it as like going to war on behalf of your child just to get some basic support for them in the classroom.
Well, yes, I completely agree with that, because you have to almost, I'm not going to say, I don't want to use the term exaggerate, but in a lot of times you do, because you have to sort of say, well, my child has this and this, and it's very strenuous.
It is, but Mark, I mean, of course this is worse for the children. It's incredibly tough for the parents as well. It's also really, really hard on teachers like yourself, who are being asked to teach children who clearly need extra support without having the extra support that you can give them.
Yes, Ben, I completely agree with that, because I'll just use an example here. One of the children that I teach, he needed SALT, which is speech and language therapy. He did not qualify for that for 2 years. And because of that, we're now having to just almost reteach things that we've taught to him in the past, but in a different way.
So day to day, if he's there for 2 years without that support, what's going on for him and for you in those 2 years?
Well, we're just in a lot of cases, we're just having to teach him the same way that we teach the rest of the class. Yes, there are extra provisions put in place. For example, we've got a provision which is called Widget, which is where we use symbols for children that struggle with reading. But we just have to use the same provisions that we use for
rest
of the children.
And that's not enough for him. Further and further behind, presumably?
Yeah, he falls further and further behind.
And gets more and more miserable and lacking in confidence and all the rest of it.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mark, really, again, it's just dire. I'm really glad that you called in, so many people have called in, to just shine a light on how desperate the situation is for so many kids with special needs. Thank you, Mark. Loads of new callers on this as well. Let's wrap up with Adam, new caller in Ashford, before we move on. Welcome to you, Adam. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Talk to me.
Yeah. So I would say, to kind of build on echo what your caller Maggie said earlier, she kind of beat me to it. I think our system's antiquated, kind of almost not fit for purpose. It seems a bit crazy to me, talking about education more broadly rather than just SEN. We've got low Yeah, so it's first time calling.
That's all right. But you're a teacher, Adam.
Yeah, I've taught mainly abroad. It was teaching English, TEFL. But I feel like lower sets, it seems a bit crazy to me that lower sets are not taught in small groups and higher sets in larger ones, or some. I just feel that there needs to be a change, some kind of change, in order to... I think that might be why we're seeing this explosion of issues. I don't know.
Of special needs, because of the way that we teach children compared to how other countries are doing it.
Yeah. So another thing I thought was really interesting in Italy, they have, this is more secondary, but they have different schools that kind of specialise in different things, like one might be the arts, one might be sciences. And I thought that was a really interesting take. And I don't know, I just feel like there needs to be, something needs to be shaken up and tried and changed in our system.
Adam, got to leave it there, I'm out of time, but thank you, interesting perspective. And it comes back to where we started the conversation. It's not just the children, it's also the whole system and how it's geared up to help them, or in too many cases, not to help them. Are they getting the time they need outside the classroom to run around outside like kids need to do? No. Are they getting the support in the classroom they need? No. Are they being inundated with homework so they don't have the time to be children? In too many cases, yes. So much has got to change in this system. So much. And the government is consulting on it. My goodness, let's hope they get this right. Thank you, Adam, for wrapping up the conversation. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC 5 o'clock the time. Here are the headlines.
Thames Water let down customers and failed to protect the environment.
Thames Water has fined more than £120 million over sewage spills and for breaking dividend rules.
Netanyahu said 2 weeks ago, we think we've got it. We are working to destroy Hamas completely.
Israel's Prime Minister says senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar has been eliminated in a recent airstrike in Gaza.
If even one war goes unpunished, more wars will follow.
Volodymyr Zelensky holds talks with a new German chancellor in Berlin, and...
So it's not softening crime, it's about making sure we build the prisons we need. We've got the bobbies on the beat.
Deputy